Welcome, welcome, welcome. Networking class. It's wonderful to see you here at SIGINT, our wonderful conference about death metal and personal liberties. My name is Johannes. I'm from Austria. That's how Austria looks like, but just in case you don't know that. Austria is well known for music and mass murder, so that's what it is. But I'm not talking about these subjects today. Today, I want to talk about reach out and touch face. Because I'm talking about failure. So reach out and touch face. Why? Of course, it should be reach out and touch faith. But I never knew that. So I thought it's actually pretty cool going out there and touching somebody's face. And you should do that with your neighbor. It's really good. Touch your other people out there and whatever. Okay, so why am I talking about failure today? Because it's really appropriate and really necessary for hackers to talk about failure. Okay. Who knows? It might not be failure. Yes, you're in fact right. Hackers love knowledge, and hackers love to show off with knowledge, and they try to find out how stuff works, and that's great. For example, this thing here. Experimentation is a major part of hacking. And why is that a major part of hacking? Because in the most philosophical sense, it's a way to deconstruct things in a philosophical way, but also in a real way to deconstruct things. A specific use is never inherent to an object, even though technical demagogues like to claim that it is. They like to tell us that there is only one certain way to use technology, and that's the right one, and that's wrong. Culture reflecting computer culture, and reflecting culture that is reflecting computer culture. Yeah, so stop that. Just compare the term self-explanatory. Compare the term self-explanatory and the term archaeological find, and you'll see what I mean. It's pretty hard task to find out what technology is and what it should do if you don't have a clue about the context of technology. Usually, the use is connected with the object through definition, let's say the instructions of use. And turning an object against the use inscribed in it means probing its possibilities, and that's pretty much hacking. Indeed, I would like to pound in a nail with a power drill, but at the moment, the fear of freedom and the fear of responsibility predominate, and that's why I don't use a power drill to hammer in a nail. I just take a hammer, but actually it would be fun to use a power drill. Science and technology studies, especially this guy, who looks a little bit nerdy, and he is a Langdon winner, and this guy, Bruno Latour, a French philosopher, they have convincingly demonstrated that the widespread inability to understand technological artifacts as fabricated entities, as social and cultural phenomena, derives from the fact that in retrospect, only those technologies that prove functional for a culture and can be integrated in everyday life are left over. However, the perception of what is functional, successful, and useful is itself the product of social and cultural, and last but not least, political and economic processes. So selection processes and abandoned products, developmental derailments, sobering intermediary results, useless prototypes, are not discussed. And that's a main part of the history of technology. All the stuff out there that didn't work for whatever reasons, it didn't work. So why am I telling you that? Because I know that many people out there are hackers, and you know about really, really obscure things more than any other people concerning with technology on this wonderful little shithole of a planet. Okay, so I came across a book. It's called Tales from the Tech Line, and the subtitle is pretty nice. It's Hilarious, Strange, but True Stories from the Computer Industry's Technical Support Hotlines, Berkeley Books, New York. It's pretty old. It's from the mid-1990s, so keep that in mind. But in it, there are stories about people who, for example, ask in soccer shops about word for Game Boy, or people who think that the beta version of their software doesn't work because they have a VHS computer. Or those who who evacuate their houses because the old Apple error message. So people running out of their homes because they are thinking that the computer would explode. Wonderful things like people who think that the mouse is a foot pedal. You use it with your foot, or those who punch holes into diskettes or drill holes into CD-ROMs so they could put them into folders. Or people who just think that the CD-ROM drive is a coffee cup holder, okay? So, yes, it's good that you applaud. It's really good. There's an excerpt from the book, and I'll read it to you. The tech guy: "All right, now I'd like you to quit any programs you're running and close any windows you've got open." The caller: "Well, okay, there are only two windows here in the basement and they're both already closed." The tech: No, the windows on your screen." Okay, so there's someone like taking the windows thing literally. Good. One might think this is poking fun at others. And of course, yes, this was roughly the intention of the publishers as well. A few laughs at someone else's expense, let's call it as it is. A baleful grin for the woefully stupid, taking delight in the ignorance of those not in the know. The esoteric, let's really call it as it is, the esoteric giggle of the congenti. It is a joke collection for the happy winners of the digital two-class society. Get wired or you're toast. Even the field of humor nowadays appears to be trimmed to productivity. But wait, and that's good because you clapped. Let's wait. Let's change the reading of this interesting book. The people in this book, they're not stupid, they are Luddites. That's the good point. I'm not sure if you know Luddites, but the English Luddites of the 19th century defended themselves against new machines in the textile industry, which impinged on their work, wages, or status. And I'm talking about these wonderful Luddites of inability here. They're, in a certain way, not in the know, but that's especially a good strategy to be ahead. And why is this? I'll tell you. These Luddites are the saving clock in the cogs of the machinery of progress, the human factor in the simple-mindedness of the programmers of our future. Inability is glorious. Inability is wonderful. It's an unknowing. It's unknowing. It's a wonderful, virtually miraculous deceleration, a sneer at the high-speed processes of our capitalist technological world. So, dear people, honorable failures out there, the clicking of your keyboard is the erosive crank of the man-eating meat grinder that your doing wears out. So what is this man-eating meat grinder out there? Of course, it's the system and your approach, the way you use or abuse, or you just don't understand your computer, makes, corporate bosses cry and sublimate capitalism with the procession of grand emotions into top management. I'm not sure if you got what I'm saying here. It's a little bit poetic, I know. But the information age is an age of permanently getting stuck. All of us, even the hackers. Greater and greater speed is demanded. New software, new hardware, new structures, new cultural techniques. Lifelong learning? Well, yes, but a company can't fire the secretary every 6 months just because she or he can't cope with the new version of Excel. No, they can count their keystrokes, they can try to measure their productivity, but they will never be able to sanction their inability. Never, motherfuckers. Because their inability is imminent. There is no way beyond inability. We're all stupid most of the time, and we have to indulge in stupidness. The Peter Principle has to be applied to humanity as a whole, too. I mean, I'm not sure if you know what the Peter Principle is, but I'll try to tell you. A person rises higher and higher in the hierarchies of life until one reaches a point where the person will no longer be promoted just because the person is simply too stupid, too incapable of the next climb. So people who are like majors, for example, in the military, who are majors for 15 years, they are majors because they are just too stupid to become a general. So they're on a level of the hierarchy where they are just like good enough or not stupid enough to, for the next rise in the hierarchy. And that's why in most of the corporations out there and most of the military systems, there are people who are really, really, really incapable of the next climb. And most of them are pretty sorry about that. So they feel bad. So hierarchies produce people who are not in touch with themselves and life because they are just not happy about what they are doing. So if the person has reached the level of incompetence, the person will ultimately perish miserably. Yeah? Nothing other than a conspiracy of ignorance, both natural and artificially created and artfully cultivated, can save us from the last step in a world that we no longer understand, just because it couldn't care less about us. There are endless possibilities for failure out there. These people in the book, these people and people who you might know out there, people who are just like, they just don't know how to use WinWord. What the fuck? Yeah, these people should be honored. They should not be laughed at, but on the contrary, these stories and these people should be read as a eulogy in honor of dissidents. They are dissidents, and we have to accept them what they are. They are heroes. The staff member who complains about the fragility of the extendable coffee cup holder 24X, you see it here, on his PC, is the fevered nightmare of the manual author thinking he has almost reached a didactic breakthrough. And just imagine the moment of epistemological panic in which his boss world collapses because he's forced to recognize that it would have been better to spend the money he invested in the product with friends at a barbecue and not into his stupid product. Just because, like, in principle, the human mind is not capable of understanding what he did. And the human consciousness, there are so many great graphics on the internet. Communication, but the good thing about communication is it fails all the time, okay? And if you see that the life of this boss, who better would have invested his money into a nice party, just like imagine this boss, and he sweats, and he just thinks, what the fuck, what did I do with my life? And he dies in mental derangement, and I'm not sorry for him, and his company with him. Okay, so why am I telling you? I'm telling you, of course, because you're hackers, and hackers deal with knowledge all the time, and most of the time, you fail by telling other people how the stuff works. To a certain extent, that's bad. To a certain extent, that's good, because you produce more and more people who fail. Someone I know recently defined a person like a personal spoken sample as his standard error sound. So he has, I don't know, whatever computer system he has, but every time there's some error, he changed it from like the beep thing to a voice sample. And the voice sample is, "Fuck your mother and die!" And every time there's some beep, it's actually, "Fuck your mother and die! Fuck your mother and die! Fuck your mother and die!" And the guy is sitting next to me in my office. And all the time I heard, "Fuck your mother and die! Fuck your mother and die!" And it constantly reminds me of how the world really is. It's hardly congenial, yeah? It's hardly congenial. It's irritating. It's stupid. It's all the time. But at the same time, well, it reminds me that we have to go out there. We have to go out there and make mistakes. We have to make small mistakes, and we have to make big mistakes. We have to make nice ones and stupid ones. We have to make trivial ones and catastrophic ones, okay? And while we're at it, be sure to fuck up your spelling, because the single most great thing to fuck up is language, and language wants to be fucked up, so please fuck it hard, I tell you. We are living in a world of mass competition. I already used this image yesterday, and I was complaining that the pedo bear is not in this picture here, but whatever. We're living in a world of mass competition. Even like memes work in a way of, do you know the next meme or not, and whatever, and do you know, you don't know lolcats? Ha ha ha, I laugh at you that you don't know lolcats, whatever. So we're nerds, we're hackers, and if we talk about what we do, we have to talk of people, what's that? Oh yes, yeah, no, we talk about this guy, yeah? That's a guy, I don't know him, he is obviously a hacker, he is from the United States of America, and he is at DEF CON, okay? And if you go to DEF CON in Las Vegas, you'll see what I'm talking about, because hacker culture, especially hacker culture that is not socially aware, is always about showing dicks. I can do this stuff better than you. And that's why I win and you suck, okay? And to a certain extent, most of the stuff even can be applied to other geek cultures, but let's stay with hackers. Through the dark and not so dark millennia of human history, we have organized ourselves into cliques, communities, and motherfucking nations. World events were like deadly pong balls. It's a nice picture, I like it. Like, imagine the world is playing pong all the time, yeah? World events were like deadly pong balls hurtling towards us. And these groups were, these like cliques and communities and nations, these groups were paddles, the paddles in a ping pong game, whose goal, of course, it was to knock the ball into someone else's court, and of course to win. Add military might, like you see here, as the means of wealth distribution to an efficient system which eats surplus wealth to sustain itself, and competition became the fabric of everyday life. That technology necessary for global cooperation did not exist, because the cliques were too small and communication was pretty hard and there was no global cooperation. But competition was thus established as the default way of interacting with the world. There was no way for global communication and cooperation. That's where everyone started in this major bullshit competition out there. In its genteel form, competition means games where nobody got killed. Gladiators turned to soccer, turned to table tennis. By 1972, computers became advanced enough to simulate competitive games, and Pong was born. So I'm actually talking about Pong here. What the fuck? Why is he talking about Pong?
Because you're old.
That's good. The deep breath. No, Nick Fine! What, did I call you Nick Fine? I'm deranged. His name is Nick Farr. But one of my best friends is David Fine, who actually helped me in preparing this talk. So I call you Nick Fine now, whatever. It's I'm failing, and that's good. I failed. I failed on stage. I called one of my best friends with the wrong name. Okay. Shut up. Okay. Pong! Okay. Pong is a trace of our competitive nature. If we don't want the pong ball to go off the table, we can program the computer to control the paddles better than any human can. We can have a perfect pong game. Nobody ever loses, okay? Our desire to play competitive pong versus other humans through obsolete hand operation is nothing but a vain show of relative one-upmanship. There is no point to competitive gaming in the computer age. I know some people will hate me for that, but that's the way it is. To be clear, we all fail, but technology could save us if we would let it to. There is enough material wealth for everyone on the planet to have a sturdy home and a steady food supply. If we stop competing and use our global communication and computation capabilities to level the playing field. The planet is a playing field and we have to level it. Let me show you. Now I'll try to switch to Firefox on my Windows machine. Hey, Windows, what the fuck is he doing? Yes, I know. Whatever. Okay. This is Brave New Pong. And how does it work? I will show you. What is this? I can only control the ball. I cannot win. What the fuck? That's the point. Yes. Well, I think I go back. Okay. You can actually play it just like Google for Brave New Pong, and then you can play it at home and not lose. In the brave new version of Pong that we created, there is no need to try to hit the ball into someone else's court. It's useless. Relax. Move the ball wherever you want, and the computer will make sure it doesn't fall off the table. Is there anything good about competition, you ask me, because I'm obviously bashing competition here. Competitive systems such as evolution and capitalism are terrific at creating unpredictable change very quickly. That's their main advantage. It's the trial by error system, and if you're looking for a wide variety of outputs, competitive systems like evolution and capitalism are the best way to do it. Not only will the product of such systems tend to improve over time, they'll fill just about any niche available to them. That's why there are so many species out there and so many ways to drink Coke or whatever, okay? Competition can be a great inspiration to develop skills related to these goals, which is great if inspiration is needed and the skills are useful ones. In a system like Pong, however, you just wind up getting better at playing Pong, and that's useless, okay? A competitive system also is great for ensuring that people who are ahead in the game get exactly what they want, when they want it, like the hawk. What is this? What? The hawk, there it is, yeah. That's actually a good one, but okay. Like the hawk, who uses highly evolved vision to catch its prey, or like first worlders who use their superior buying power to get iPods or whatever, yeah? But why is competition an outdated ideal? Although competitive systems produce such good things as human beings and Diet Coke, we also wind up with such things as woolly mammoths, like completely extinct, and guided missiles. Like this one, delivered in 30 minutes or less, or the next one's free. it's generating alienation, and it's a horribly inefficient way of producing things people truly need. We are wasting lots of time and energy and effort in trying to produce 5,000 different MP3 players. Why? There are better ways to do that, okay? Most energy in the competitive system is spent not in producing a product, but it's spent to stay competitive. So it's a system that it's feeding itself and is not like creating any additional wealth. In evolution, this manifests in a less than desirable cycle of predator-prey adaptation escalation, so that predators and prey, and they are all like trying to find better ways to survive. That's, of course, a shitful waste of energy. Where like more energies are spent surviving than actually living, and that's bad. In capitalism, it results the same sort of relationship, except between those with capital value and those without capital value. People who don't have capital value are trapped working for those who do, and their energies are directed towards keeping their team competitive. Bottom line, it's a waste of resources. In our competitive system, most of our energies are redundant and wasteful. Redundancy is the result of the wasted overhead when multiple people are working on the same problem in different teams, like Team Coke and Team Pepsi. They are both working on the cola problem, yeah? But there are better ways to solve the cola problem, huh? Each team, yes, for example, yeah, each team spends huge amounts of resources battling each other and not creating a better Coke, okay? Even within a supposedly cooperative society, most businesses exist in order to support other businesses. How much would production of essential goods decrease if we laid off our accountants and all the people who supply computers for accountants, or all the people who print brochures for computer salesmen, and the people who produce the ink for the brochures, and the people who make packaged food for the truckers who drive the ink cartridges around, and whatever, okay? That's how our system works. Think of the construction workers, like here, who build our office towers, and the companies that supply raw material, and the miners who dig them out of the earth, and who are mostly somewhere in Africa and dying, and the manufacturers of processed foods, since everyone involved is so busy to feed themselves. This is all within the same nation system where we supposedly share a common goal. In Pong, the fact that your opponent keeps hitting the ball at you means you must spend resources defending your goal instead of using your time for more noble endeavors than playing Pong. So while we're at it, let's get rid of the patent system too and all advertisement everywhere. How much effort goes into staying ahead of the game? I don't even know, like gigawatts of energy. Most of our jobs are not directly responsible for producing the things we need as a society. So imagine how much manpower could be freed to work on other things. That's why we created a brave new Pong. Evolution and the very rotten system of capitalism have brought us to the point where it's possible to propel ourselves out of our current state of affairs. We are intelligent enough now that we don't need randomness of a competitive system. We don't need evolution. We can program randomness. It's pretty easy, actually. And things that used to be competitive games should now be cooperative games or even non-games. The world is no longer made up of unpredictable systems separated by incommunicable distances. This example here is a major example of fail. It's off the shores of Dubai, where they created a whole like map of the world in form of real islands, and they were trying to sell these islands so multimillionaires could buy these islands and have their villas on them or like spend a good time there. The main problem is they didn't think of the ecosystem off the shore of Dubai. The problem is they created all these artificial islands out of concrete blocks where they put sand on top of them. The main problem was that these concrete blocks formed small holes and caves and niches, and it was the perfect breeding ground for one of the most poisonous snakes, water snakes on the planet. So people can't live there because they do not want to live there because they cannot go and swim in the ocean because there are stupid snakes everywhere. Yeah. So they invested millions of dollars and billions of dollars creating these artificial islands to sell them to rich people who now do not want to live there because they didn't consult biologists. Okay. Good. By using computer models to produce what we want and distribute it fairly, the age-old game of producing for production's sake can come to an end. Humans have tried organizing themselves in more equitable arrangements in the past, but these systems were ultimately run by other humans. In the new world, we'll be able to relax and let technology do the job. And I'm not a technocrat, I have to tell you, but I think it will work. The pong ball will never fall off the table ever again. Doesn't that sound nice, like a little hippie-ish? Well, I don't know. Maybe all these people are dead by now because they take too much drugs. I don't know. But we have to start to forge our own destiny. I'm in a certain way talking about planned economy here, but at the same time, it's not planned economy, because planned economy dealt with many, many things, but not with itself. The planned economists of the Stalinist eras were not planned economists, they were bureaucratic collectivist societies, and they all failed because one essential part was missing. It was the part of, like, we have to work together. A planned economy, a planned society only can work if we distribute the stuff and really talk what we want to do. And an important part of this is democracy. There never was democracy in a planned economy. And if we combine the knowledge of like open source movements and all that stuff with the knowledge of like running systems, huge systems, as for example economies, I think there might be an interesting future. But let's see. Why am I telling you all that stuff? A, I think we all should fail, maybe with even with the stuff I'm telling you right now. I'm actually pretty sure that I will fail. I think that capitalism is pretty hard to conquer. I think I'll fail in not seeing its demise. But I think we should try. And technology has an important role in trying. But people lack technological knowledge. I mean, you know that. So-called everyday people, like these guys here, they don't know anything about software, hardware. They fail all the time, and that's pretty okay. But at the same time, how can we try to spread information and misinformation? The internet is not the best way, I have to tell you. And I'd like to tell you why. I think the internet is not an emotional medium. You might attack me for that, but I do not think that the internet is an emotional medium for spreading information beyond mere knowledge and tidbits of information. One of the major art forms of the 20th century was cinema, and still cinema is a major art form. And if you follow all the discussions about copyright and intellectual property and movies, it's still very important as a form to make money. Movies are important, and movies are a big industry. And movies are, I have to agree, a very exciting place to go. I like movies. I like to go to movies to see, and I mean, I've never cried watching a homepage on the internet. I never cried watching a homepage. but I cried in the cinema. And that's what I'm telling you. It's about the emotional value of spreading information, because some information out there needs attached information as an emotion. It just doesn't need to tell people that people in China are being exploited. People have to cry about the people being exploited in China. That's the main purpose we should go for. So, movies are great places. I mean, there is stuff like Free Willy 2 and Indecent Proposal and Slacker. Slacker, yes, and Grumpy Old Man. I really like that one. Great. But the best part is things crashing and bumping and exploding. That's the really interesting part of cinema. The best movies are where you can cry and there are explosions. Bolts and fists are flying. It bangs, it kabooms. People go to the cinema in order to experience something. But I postulate traditional narrative cinema finds itself in a catch-22 situation at the beginning of the 21st century. Question mark in impact font. Who should help it? Answer? Most definitely not me, but it's just a couple of thoughts here, and maybe you can help. That's why I'm telling it to you. Cinema is about to lose its prime source of narrative, having so far lived from physical action that can be filmed. Cinema needs tempo. Cinema needs speed. Cinema needs something that can be filmed. It needs action, okay? The movement image, as Gilles Deleuze, may he rest in peace, calls it. Cinema needs physical action onto which the camera can be pointed. Yet, the real world looks like this nowadays. The real world of non-cinema is losing physical action day by day by day. Most of my life is on Facebook and Twitter and not talking to real people. That doesn't mean that it's not like that it's bad and that I should talk more to real people than talk to them via Twitter or Facebook. But most of the people nowadays, that's their life and not the physical real world out there, because they're working in some offices and staring into a computer screen. It is a time of abstract, optically not presentable processes in networks and data systems. And you hackers, you know about that. Computers are often large and black. More often, they are small and beige, okay? That is the case in this one here. And the cases and cables are only that's the thing. I mean, computers nowadays pretty much look like this. They're a little bit smaller, but whatever. That's computers. Computers are boring. They're not pretty to look at. And I'm not talking about crazy case models or something, okay? No. Computers are boring to film. The cases and cables are the only visual parts computers offer, and that's pretty meager, I would call it. The visible vanishes out of technology. And this regress of visual display ability is rather daft. Cinema has lived well from it for more than 100 years. It's easy, it's very easy, to turn an attack on Fort X or a train robbery on Route Y to Z into a blockbuster. Same thing goes for bank robberies. Bank robberies are great to film. It's really good. There's something action. Blah, blah, blah. Action, yeah? The main problem is there's movement, there are things happening, but to hack into an ATM is filmed within 20 minutes and lasts perhaps like a minute or two if you edit it. It's easy money, like you remember Terminator 2? Easy money is the quote in Terminator 2, if I remember correctly. So the most important crimes nowadays perhaps take place in electronic money movements between international stock exchanges. Hollywood cinema, on the other hand, still hasn't thought of anything better than chases out of an Errol Flynn movie. So Hollywood is pretty good in telling stories, but most of these stories are obsolete. They are not in touch and connection of what people nowadays really do and where they work and how they plan their lives. Following this analogy, you could turn rather grim. How can we portray the stories of this new millennium? all these dramas and comedies, all these crimes and stories. Traditional cinema has been trying to avoid addressing this problem for some time. For example, there's this nice film from 1996 called Eraser, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. There's a nice scene where you have a power cut in an office, and the computer doesn't eject a CD-ROM drive, doesn't eject a CD-ROM anymore. And the CD-ROM is really important for Schwarzenegger because it has all the evidence on the CD-ROM. So because it's pretty boring to just press eject, the CD-ROM gets out and you go away, or Schwarzenegger goes away with the CD-ROM. Of course, there is a power cut, and there is no power, and he can't get the CD-ROM out. So what does he do? He takes his fists, he slams into the computer, he rips the CD-ROM out. Wow! I mean, that's the way traditional cinema nowadays deals with the computer age, okay? What does the main character do? He is powerful and does interesting things. Like this one, that's a Motorola phone in the same film, Schwarzenegger, at the very end of the film, it's like the last 10 minutes showdown, yeah? He is always communicating with his cell phone and blah, blah, blah. You know, 1996, it was pretty advanced back then. You had like cell phones, whatever, blah, blah, blah. So, but before the big showdown, before it's really going to like the gut showdown, like the blood showdown, they're like the evil guy has to die showdown. Of course, Schwarzenegger throws away his cell phone. And he's even like, well, I don't need you any longer or something. He throws away technology, and the only technology he still has is a gun. Actually, a gun, a big gun. There are more examples of such dramatic cramps. Banderas and Stallone, for instance, kick each other with notebooks. They have a fight. They fight each other, and they take their notebooks and try to hit each other with their notebooks, okay? What the fuck? Okay. Whatever. There is like an interesting scene in Mission Impossible. If you know Mission Impossible, you will laugh. You don't, whatever. It's a stupid film. So it's stupid. Like, tell me one film where they really make it clear that we live in the 21st century and not in some like a bad copy of a bad copy of a bad copy of a Western from 1945. Okay? There's a great quote. It's part of an interesting, in the meantime, you could actually call it a poem. It's called The International, you know? The Internationale. To be nothing, don't carry it any longer. That's the quote. So goes The International. Schwarzenegger and all the damned of this world of action heroes are a curious community of solidarity, I would call it. As the very same deindustrialization processes, the same technology which erases and erased the American working class, for example, now takes employment away from Schwarzenegger as well. The machines and units which have taken over from industrial workers are the very same that are... The machines that have taken over the work of industrial workers are the same machines now that make the movies so look so damn boring. It's pretty much the same process. And now every action hero is pretty much like the last one in a struggle against the machinery of post-industrial neoliberal society of globalization. It's only ironic that many of the spectacular scenes you see in action films are only possible with digital trickery. So most of the technology in movies is about showing like a train being blown up, but it's not like they don't show the technology that creates the digital effect. Brecht, you know that guy possibly, wrote in the 1920s that the picture of a Krupps plant would not show how Krupps as an enterprise functions. Well, back then, you could at least point the camera on machines and manual laborers. If somebody wants to film the workstation of our service-oriented society nowadays, has to show people on computers. People are sitting there with a bad posture like some of you have here, and that's not exactly entertaining. The mechanisms behind it avoid displayability, and that's pretty sad. And that's why I tell you, because you're hackers, you're people who deal with that stuff all the time. There are so many people who are really looking for good scripts for the movie industry. And I'm not even like damning the movie industry for making businesses here. I actually want to rescue cinema. I want to rescue it, and I want to bring it to the next century. So if you have good ideas, write them down. You can only fail, which would be good anyways, to write a good script about the 21st century and how you use technology. And I think if we don't do that, cinema will be die or will be like a living dead medium for the rest of eternity. And I really want to cry in a movie about computers, okay? Please. So let's do a little organic visualization training here. Push together your eyebrows and speak loudly with me. Oh yeah, that's really important. It's a horse and it's free, like you are. Okay. I want a general recognition of the vanishing of the visible and a disengagement from the anachronistic. The pronunciation was a little bit bad. I'll start again and you help me, okay? I want a general recognition of the vanishing of the visible and a disengagement from the anachronistic. That's how you pronounce it. From cinema, which has been outdated by technology. Yes, okay? So, as a grand finale now, in my tour of the fail, I want you to present you with a wonderful song about Hollywood. It's an Austrian song from the 1970s. It's called Good Old Hollywood is Dying. Have you heard about that one? It's not as good as like surfing multimedia, but it's pretty nice. It's like two pretty stupid guys. One of them got a hair transplant a couple of years ago. And they sing about the good old Hollywood that is dying. And I think we need something nice, a form of solidarity. I know you can't sing, I can't sing, but we'll make it together. So let's try it. Please volume up for good old Hollywood is dying. I hope we have enough power, enough volume, and let's try it. Yeah. Ah! Okay. Did you ever see a movie where Errol Flynn played Robin Hood? Where Gary Cooper played a hero? And where Jane Mansfield was all nude? The fucking sexists! Did you ever see a movie where Shirley Temple played a child? Where Rock Hudson played a lover? I want to see lighters, come on. Where James Dean got really wild? Yeah! Good old Hollywood is dying. Good old Hollywood is crying. Good old Hollywood is dead. Ah! Did you ever see a movie where Gene Kelly danced so bright? Where Judy Garland sang a love song? where Humphrey Bogart lost the fight. Good old Hollywood is dying. Come on! Get up! Stand up! Now! Yes! Good old Hollywood is dead! Thank you very much. Have a wonderful evening. My name is Johannes Grenzfurth. Now that's my email address and my Twitter account. You can send me anything. I will try to read it. Good night.